Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are Lizzie and Justin. We are from Third Space. This is Turning Towards Life. It's our 462nd week, and we're so delighted that you're here with us wherever and whenever you're watching or listening. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And it's wonderful to see you, Lizzie. We're going to do in a minute what we always do, which is you have brought us a really excellent source, which we're going to put in between us and see what conversation arises. And all of you who are with us, you're welcome to do the same. If you want to, in a moment, head over to the show notes or to turningtowards.life or to YouTube, and you can find the source. And if you want to read it and take it in and then begin your own conversation with this source or with another person, you're so welcome to do that. And if you want to sign up to get these sources in your email, go to turningtowards.life, where you can sign up for the weekly emails. You can be in contact with us, which we always love to hear from anyone what kind of impact this conversation is having on you and your life and what you're doing with it. You can support us there. You can buy us cups of coffee, which keeps the wheels turning on this big endeavor. And you can join us in a couple of ways. So in September 2026, Lizzie, you and I are for 2 days leading the Third Space Foundations of Coaching Introduction to Integral Development Coaching Program, which is online, accessible from anywhere in the world, and wonderful and a delight to do. So you can join us there. And very excitingly, mid-September, our third season of Turning Towards Life Live, which runs monthly on Zoom, evening time, UK time, accessible from anywhere in the world. And there's a chance to do this that you and I are doing together, Lizzie, with a group of people. And it's a really excellent, welcoming, and also deepening opportunity to be in a big old conversation about something that matters in life. And the theme that we're taking up for the next season is love. And the doors are open, and you're really welcome to join us. It is all at turningtowards.life. And I think, Lizzie, I have done enough preambling now, so I'm going to stop and I'm going to hand over to you.
Well, thank you for ambling us to here to this point. We have a wonderful source today. If you're new here, this is what happens. We bring a source between us, and we bring ourselves, whoever we are today, to the wondering of what it means to us, what it brings up in our understanding, what there is to say, to reflect on, to inquire into, and we see where it goes. We don't have this planned out. We have the source that I picked yesterday evening, and we alternate between us as to who brings the source. And this time I'm bringing this brilliant, what I think is a very brilliant piece of writing by Rick Rubin, from his book called The Creative Act, A Way of Being, which I would highly recommend to anyone who's interested in being human. It's quite something. And this is kind of towards the end of the book. There's so many different aspects of his work. And the beauty of it is it's quite small chapters, so you can flick it open to any way you like, and it gives you gems and beauties that you need. So it's also substantial. It's not like a kind of just a little page each chapter or something. It's like a proper piece of work. And thank you, Rick. If ever in a million years you might get to listen to us, we're super grateful for the outpouring of your heart and your intelligence and your life's work into a book so that we can all join in. It's really wonderful. So Justin, I'm going to read and then I'll hand to you and we'll see where the stream takes us. So this is from a part of the book called The Prism of Self. Defining one's true self is not so simple. It may be impossible. We inhabit many different versions of a changing self. The suggestion to be yourself may be too general to be of much use. There's being yourself as an artist, being yourself with your family, being yourself at work, being yourself with friends, being yourself in times of crisis or in times of peace, and being yourself for yourself when by yourself. In addition to these environmental variations, we are also always changing within. Our moods, our energy level, the stories we tell ourselves, our prior experiences, how hungry or tired we are, all these variants create a new way of being in each moment. Depending on who we're with, where we are, and how safe or challenged we feel, we are changing all the time. moving between different aspects of self. We may have one aspect that wants to be more bold or subversive, which wrestles with our more agreeable conflict avoidant self. There may be a dreamer aspect aspiring to inhabit vast, magnificent worlds, at odds with our pragmatic side that questions our ability to make our dreams real. There is a constant negotiation occurring between these various aspects, and each time we tune into a particular one, different choices result, changing the outcome of our work. In a prism, a single beam of light enters and is broken into an array of colours. The self too is a prism. Neutral events enter and are transformed into a spectrum of feelings, thoughts and sensations. All this information is processed distinctively by each aspect of self, refracting life's light in its own way and emitting different shades of art. For this reason, not every work can reflect all of ourselves. Perhaps it's never possible, no matter how hard we try. Instead, we might embrace the prism of self and keep allowing reality to bend uniquely through us. Like a kaleidoscope, we can adjust the aperture on our vision and change the results. We may aim to work from one particular aspect, like taking on a character and creating something from our darkest self or our most spiritual self. Those two works won't be the same, but they both come from us and they would both be true colours. The more we accept our prism-like nature, the more free we become to create in different colours, and the more we trust the inconsistent instincts we hold while making art. We don't have to know why something is good or wonderful, if it's the right decision or if it reflects us accurately. It's simply the light our prism emits naturally at this moment in time.
Thank you, Lizzie. I'm going to start partway through. Depending upon who we're with, where we are, and how safe or challenged we feel, we are changing all the time, moving between different aspects of self. We may have one aspect that wants to be more bold or subversive, which wrestles with our more agreeable conflict-avoidant self. There may be a dreamer aspect, aspiring to inhabit vast, magnificent worlds, at odds with our pragmatic side that questions our ability to make our dreams real. There is a constant negotiation occurring between these various aspects, and each time we tune into a particular one, different choices result, changing the outcome of our work. For this reason, not every work can reflect all of ourselves. Perhaps it's never possible, no matter how hard we try. Instead, we might embrace the prism of self and keep allowing reality to bend uniquely through us. Like a kaleidoscope, we can adjust the aperture on our vision and change the results. We may aim to work from one particular aspect, like taking on a character, and create something from our darkest self or our most spiritual self. Those two works won't be the same, but they both come from us, and they would both be true colours. The more we accept our prism-like nature, the more free we become to create in different colours, and the more we trust the inconsistent instincts we hold while making art. We don't have to know why something is good or wonderful. If it's the right decision or if it reflects us accurately, it's simply the light our prism emits naturally at this moment in time.
It's very wonderful to hear you, Justin. Thank you. As you were reading, I was feeling into this prismness. And my made-up word, multitudinousness, feels really strong here. That we are this way that the light reflects and refracts through this prism differently at any time. And the way I'm experiencing this also at the moment, Justin, in my work, and I think, you know, Rick Rubin's talking about work here, I think in any context, but he's a music producer. So it's specifically like kind of creative expression and output that's the main context. But I think this is universally available to all of us in whatever work we're doing. And the work I am most alive to at the moment in me is working with others in service of finding lightness, less suffering, more avenues of possibility, something like that. And in that, I can see that allowing a conversation to have anything in it that wants to belong in it, and to not settle on it as somebody's identity, our own identity, just because I say this thing doesn't mean it's who I am. I also get to say it. I might have really intrusive, awful thoughts, or some really twisted feelings that come forth, or some beautiful perception of something that's very unusual and magical, or some imaginal beauty comes through. And to be the one who sets the scene and creates the container for any of those ways that the light is currently refracting through, to let them all be here, whatever they are, and for them to be held in a container of allowing and welcome, so that we get to say the things that are on our hearts without being ashamed, or without thinking there's something wrong with us, or without thinking that it makes me a bad person, or that I should be completely written off and condemned for this thing, so I'm never going to say it in the world. To be safe enough that we can allow our prismness to come through in all of its shades seems to me the kind of welcome that all us humans need. We do need this. We need places that allow us to appear the way we're appearing right now and to be welcomed. So in a way, I think Rick's writing is a big, massive welcome, because I think there is this thing that exists of, well, who are you? What do you stand for? What are you? And a kind of narrowing, an expectation of narrowing of ourselves to fit into some shape that looks like we know who we are and we've got this nailed. We know what's going on or something. And this line that got me at the beginning was, you know, defining one's true self is not so simple. It's true. It's not. It's an ever-shifting landscape. And whatever that landscape looks like at any one time deserves to be welcomed. And then if it's something that wants to stick around, it sticks around, and something that wants just to be released can be released. But I feel like if we don't release and express what wants to be expressed, it can become something that it's not intended for really quickly, because it doesn't have a home, it doesn't have a welcome to go to. So I'm really, really appreciating that there's this link between just the generalness of being human and this act of creativity as a way of being that Rick Rubin's talking to us about.
So I notice, Lizzie, that I had two parallel things going on in reading Rick and then listening to you, which I'm going to see if I can tease out, because I think that there's a helpful form of them and an unhelpful form of them. I'll see if I can get to it. So one of the things I think Rick is pointing to so excellently is the way that we build a sense of self and the way that we demand that other people have a stable sense of self. So this whole thing he says, where he says, look, there's really no yourself that's a fixed thing. One moment with this and one moment with that. We've got 500 million things going on inside us, and they're often in conflict with one another. There's darkness and light. There's love and hate. There's frustration and openness. There's joy and fear. That's right. And then what we do is we make for ourselves a much narrower sense of, this is who I am and this is what I'm going to present to the world. And then we also maybe even make the mistake of believing our own story about ourselves, the one that we're presenting, and excluding so much of ourselves that we go, that doesn't belong. So I think it's incredibly important. And of course, in a way, what you're pointing to so importantly and so strongly is, We're not only do we box ourselves in that way, but we box one another in that way. So to the extent that I go, well, I know you, Lizzie, and if you act out of my story of who you are, I can discount or push back on that and go, well, that's not you, Lizzie. Lizzie wouldn't do that. Lizzie wouldn't say that. And it might be joy or sadness or directness or tenderness. So you and Rick are arguing in a really important way for an undoing of a a way of understanding what a person is that sometimes and often really limits possibilities for bringing ourselves to the world, for making art, and as you said, for creating possibility. And I also think hope, you know, in a world where sometimes we can feel very constrained, I think hope is incredibly important. And I think this is important. You and I began a long conversation before we came on air about the hostile architecture of the world, how there are many parts of the world that will not welcome anyone who doesn't fit the particular story about what it is to be a person. There's lots to say about that. And so that's part one. My part two is, and I know if I look at myself, I think one of the things that's a conundrum about this is some of what I hold back from the world will be real gifts, you know, things that really need to be brought. And and what a commitment it is to say, I love this thing he says, what if we make some work from our darkest self or our most spiritual self, like that sense that I could find a location in me from which to make. I also know that there are places in me that are filled with rage or hate, that there might be a passing meanness that comes my way that's in me, Lizzie, that if I were just to say to you the meanness that comes, I might cause you hurt or upset. And it would have gone because it will be some part that's very desperate or very... So there's also a sort of discernment that's called for about when, what gets amplified and when it gets amplified and in what way, and where do we bring things that feels very alive for me. And I think if you think about it as a sort of polarity of the sort of the freedom to bring all of us and the discernment to know when and where to bring it, I think that one of the difficulties we get into is that the sort of moral discernment, like I couldn't bring that and 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 I couldn't bring that, in our culture often takes the biggest share. So we hold it all back and we're so out of contact with so much of ourselves because we're frightened about what it would be if we would bring it. And at the same time, I know that discernment really matters, like the discerning parts that know when to swear and when not to, you know, when to wear the kind of clothes that will not have me thrown out of the room. We're walking both simultaneously. And if I hold both of those, I think that what I take from what you're saying and from what Rick writes is that we are mostly deeply, deeply starved of the places where what is in us can first get a welcome and first get some kind of expression so that we can then bring some discernment about, does it belong? Is it for this or is it for that? We have constrained ourselves and exiled so much of ourselves. And in the end, that itself is a huge problem, because as long as I'm carrying aspects of myself that are ignored, exiled, kept in the dark, it's not only, as Rick says, that beautiful, important, necessary, truthful art might get made if I could bring it, it's also that I'm so much less of a person in the world if all of that is kept out of view, but also all of that is still there. So it's shaping me, even if I'm not attending to it. It's pressing in on me, even if I'm not. So there's something dignifying and necessary about finding ways to meet the beauty and the good intention of even those parts of me that don't know how to conduct themselves well, you know, that haven't yet figured out how not to say a hurtful thing at the wrong time just because it happened to come through in my mind. That also may be a part that has deep truth to say and has great insight and has... So I'm sort of navigating the tension between the two as we speak. And I think art's probably a very good place to start, because actually art and conversation, making and expressing with the kind of welcoming background that you're advocating for, Lizzie, is the thing that we, many of us, least least have as we try to cling to this what's my true self question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's coming up for me, Justin, is I was in a conversation with somebody this week where she's in a very complex situation, and there's the version of her that looks like the good stepmom and the provider and the generous person and whatever. And it really mattered that we talked about all her most ungenerous parts. It really mattered, because the longer those things don't get air and light, the more they, as you said, they're going on in her anyway, and they're coming out sideways in all kinds of directions when her system is under pressure. So the more she can say, do you know what? I feel really terrible about this, and these are my dark thoughts about this, and this is how annoyed I feel, and you know, all of that can come out in the context of this prism premise that yes, there's the generous parts, yes, there's the really vindictive parts, there's a manipulative parts, there's all of these things are here, and it's all okay and it's all welcome. Because when they can be held in relationship and held in some kind of somewhere not inside our own bodies, beings in a world, they don't have to drive the bus so strongly anymore in moments where we don't know what we're doing because we're reactive and we're triggered and all of those things. So this kind of welcome of those parts of you, I mean, and funnily, when you said that, Justin, you know, there are parts of me that, I can't remember what you said now, but something not so nice, that are mean or something. I'm like, oh, I really want to know Justin's mean parts. Like, I love the parts that are not what they're supposed to be, if you know what I mean. Like, I really genuinely love them, and I feel interested in them, and I feel relieved when other people talk about them, because of course I have them too. So there's a kind of way that them coming to the light and them being allowed to be here is also giving permission for us to be just honest. I mean, we're just honest about the way that we have, the thoughts that we have and the feelings that we have and the perceptions that we have that come from goodness knows where, by the way. I find voices in me. I don't even know that I think that, but it's here. I'm having the thought, picked it up from somewhere. And, or maybe some piece of my history is coming to find me to be looked at or something, or my ancestry, or I don't know what. But it's like all of it belongs. It must belong because it's here. So if we can create a sense of belonging for all of the different parts and all of the different voices and all of the different pieces of us to be here and held, it makes sense that they get what they need. And then we don't find ourselves in this kind of, maybe we don't find ourselves any longer in the repeated pattern of all of my kind of vitriol coming out when I'm triggered, because those parts have kind of had their conversations and their ongoing conversations, and they don't need to drive the bus, as it were. They don't need to run the show. So I'm feeling the kind of the blessing of this notion of the prism and the light coming through in all kinds of different ways, and reflecting on ourselves and being in contact with ourselves is a really big act of creativity. Like, it takes dedication and it takes being with ourselves in a particular way that we even know what on earth is going on with us, in tiny part, probably, in all the scheme of our universal vastness. We're having a go at being creative with this being that is this human being. And honestly, I really know these days, after doing what you and I do and with people, Justin, for all these years, that things come alive in a conversation of reflection that neither of us could have even fantasized about coming up. Like, what happens in the reflective process in conversation when it's safe and real and open is quite extraordinary, like unimaginably so. There's something seriously creative in the reflective conversation between two human beings, where we're holding difficulties and sensitivities and beauties and wonders together, and very complex, strange, intractable things. And then things get born that you couldn't have even thought up if you tried as outcomes. And so it's why our work, Justin, isn't like a load of promises. We don't say, oh yes, we can get you from A to B, or we can make this happen. It's not even definable what can happen. It's emergent. It's like, what can emerge between you and I when we become safe with one another to the point that everything can be here. And we have some longings and we have some sufferings and we want to reflect and for something to shift. There are possibilities that we can't even perceive of that when we gather together, somehow miraculously become available. And that's what I know now. I really know that that happens again and again and again, which is very different to a marketing program that tells me what you're going to get or what's going to happen, or these are the outcomes. This is where we're going to, it's an unpredictable outcome. It's an unpredictable future, but one that's entirely excellent in my view of what so far has happened. And that allows me to believe that really there are extraordinary things happen when we gather in consciousness together and bring our multitudinousness, the way that the light is refracting in this moment, when we come together and look at that together and be in it together, really quite unimaginable things happen.
Well, it you could hear perhaps in my earlier response, Lizzie, the parts of me that in me that are concerned with impact on the world and impact on others, like what happens for one another when we bring ourselves, which I think is a really important part of this. And there's also here the deep shadow side of that is when that becomes a way of making ourselves very, very small in one another's presence. We began this conversation before we came on air about the way that the world in which so many of us lives has very predetermined stories about what a person should be, you know, how you should learn and how you should express yourself and how you should move and how you should rest and what you should say and when you should speak. And, you know, there's a sort of, the culture often plays a very, very big part in that boxing in. And here, what you're advocating for so strongly, which I am really with, is we humans are vast and full of treasures. Yeah, there's darkness can be a treasure. And yes, there's something that occurs as meanness can be a treasure. And there's also love and sacredness and connect. You know, I could have this long, long list of virtues of being a human. And what I'm thinking now is that part of what's called for is exactly what you're saying when you talk about our work and when you talk about this conversation, is can we create spaces for one another where it's possible to find that and give it a place and it can be welcomed. And I'm also really taken by what Rick Rubin says about art, because I know that for me, for example, one of the places this happens is writing. I write a lot, and I have found that writing first for myself is a place where I can do exactly this. It's such a delicious and excellently confronting invitation. I love this sentence. I think that's why I drew attention to it. It's like, what is it to work from, to write from, or draw from, or paint from, or sing from, or compose from, or sculpt from, or whatever it is? My darkest part. What is it to do that from my most spiritual self? What is it to do that from that in me which is joy? What is it to do from that in me which is very, very afraid? And I think that there's now, in listening to you, that there's two different aspects to this. One is the part of it that you, I think you were just talking about, which is that when we can meet that in ourselves and one another and give it air in a way, it can grow into a kind of sort of like a maturity, like the parts, instead of driving the bus, those parts of ourselves can take their place alongside. We've used this language a lot before. Rick Rubin uses this too, is that there is also kind of a sense of, there may not be a fixed self here, but there is a something that we can really rely on that holds for the goodness of people and for our capacity to take care of the world and take care of one another. So all of the parts can live there. So I'm thinking about that, about our kind of bringing ourselves to the world ever more fully, ever more creatively, ever more hopefully, ever more with ever more care for one another and for the world, with ever more freedom. And I'm also thinking about the value of art itself, which I think Rick is making a claim for here, which is when you were talking about our work, Lizzie, you said often it's hard to say what the sort of practical outcome of a piece of work is, apart from that we might meet ourselves more fully. We might come to know ourselves and one another more fully. And I think Rick is asking the same of us.
You got me really hopeful, Justin, about the stories we tell and how we could be telling a different story at any one moment, like our life as a comedy or our life as a tragedy, for example. So I'm left thinking about all the different ways that we could narrate ourselves, all the different ways that we could tell the story, and from which part we could speak, the comedy telling part or the tragedy telling part. And if anyone's watching the video now, by the way, my little toddler's trying to get into the room and I'm thinking we just need to finish our podcast. I'm holding the door handle so he can't get in. But Justin, this has been amazing, and maybe this is a sign that this is our time is up. I love Rick Rubin. I love the fact that we're talking about our work as an act of creativity. And I love this actual creative act that we're in now of finding words and seeing what happens and how this is a faithful creative act that we do every week, Justin. So thank you for being here, everybody. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Rick. If you're ever listening, we love you. Please say hello. We'll try and say hello to you. Yeah, thank you for being here. And hopefully we'll see you at one of our events that Justin mentioned at the beginning very soon. And please email us hello@turningtowards.life. We would love to hear from you.
Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.